KNW iRadio 76 proudly presents the 515 Show with your host, John Sarver. Who's at the 515 door today?
Now, this is going to be fun. Only because the joyous thing is that we've met this family, and it's kind of like, I shan't say the Partridge Family of racing, or the Cowsills of racing, but every time you take another look on the family tree, there is another branch that's running in the low sevens. How does this work? How does this go from grandfather to mother to kids, now all the way down to the teeniest, tiniest member? And we're going to find out all about that today. Tyler from Nighthawk Performance Plus and Cycle Bitch Racing is here with us today. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on, John.
Oh, we'd love to have you on. You know, the unfortunate thing is, and everybody knows, if you're confused, that we're going to have Denise on. Unfortunately, Denise is feeling a little bit under the weather, so Tyler was next man up. He was like, yeah, put me in the box. We'll do this.
I'm always looking for a good opportunity to talk.
And as well you do. So we will do the same questions that we had set up already. And
all right.
When did you start racing, and when did you have Christina, and when did you marry your husband? Oh, wait a minute. That's for your grandma.
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer those ones.
I know we're looking at it going, all right, which questions would be pertaining to you? However, bless your heart, though, for – now, I know there's a story behind this, but – for the folks that are around here, they know that we had the affinity for the monster body that you run. You know, because we thought they were such a time capsule of that time when people were running even pro stock. I mean, when Grumpy was running that body style in pro stock, it was an amazing car. And now you're coming back out with it. Tell us a story about that car.
Yes, that car means to more to me than anything in the world. It started as my grandpa's. He built the car in their shop. I can't give you the exact year. I want to say it was between 88 and 90 that they assembled the car.
You know what? We should do, and I'm sorry about that, but we should probably tell people who your grandfather is.
Yeah, so my grandfather, Chris Wallace, Nighthawk Performance Plus is what he was known for. I remember growing up and seeing my grandpa's and my father's cars that were the all-black cars with gold wheels would say Nighthawk on the side, and everybody recognizes him. I still bring the car out today, and I kept the look the same, and people will come up to me at random events and say, I remember this car. I remember the old man that had it, the old grumpy guy. I can't believe he sold it.
How nice. How nice. Yeah. You're talking about your grandfather. Yeah, the old crank that used to have this before.
Okay. And everybody's got that memory of him. And I've always heard the story, well, I can't believe he sold it. Well, he never did. That was, I still to this day say it's his car. I've had it in my possession for a couple years now. It sat last year as I've been working on some upgrades for it, but it's getting ready to come back out. And trying to make it the best car that it can be. It's been one of my favorite cars to drive. I just love being in it. It's comfortable. I couldn't even count how many cars, probably 20 plus cars, race car wise. And there's no feeling like sitting in that car and how comfortable it is to me. And it feels like home. Everybody's got that one car that they always miss. They always want. And that's that car to me.
Well, what was that car originally? I mean, I know it's a Mazda, but what did it have it in originally when your grandfather was campaigning it?
He took a Chris Alston chassis kit. What that is they used to sell, and I believe they still do, sell complete chassis kits, cages, frames, everything, and he built the car and stuck the Mazda body on it. Everything was built in his garage, and so it still has the same frame under it today that it had in it in the 90s and 2000s when he was running it.
Engine-wise,
we have upgraded the engine a little bit. We're building a new motor for it this year. It's going to be approximately probably a 498 big block Chevy. he had a 350 small block in it for most years. So it was built for a small block, but it had everything tabbed in it for a big block Chevy. He ran a small block in it in the car with a small block in it. And I tested this when I first received the car. You could put a standard stock small block in it. I unbolted the heads, put a set of aluminum heads on it of just a standard off the shelf small block, and the car went 9-0s.
Wow.
Okay. It's an extremely light car.
Yeah, it is. And aerodynamically, you know, it was like one of the better ones of that era. You know, I mean, it's a unique car because it looks, again, everybody and their brother was campaigning that at one time, and then they kind of fell away and people stopped doing it. We're thrilled that you're bringing back that body style. But, I mean, this car must have had a heck of a story attached to it. Yes, it's your grandfather's car, but your grandfather also owned Nighthawk Performance Plus, didn't he? Or did he? Or?
Yes. Okay. Yes, he. The company was between him and my grandma Denise. They owned it together. My grandpa was a engineer at Ford on the night shift. During his daytime, he was working at the performance parts shop out in Plymouth.
Wow, what a gig! And you grew up all around this.
Yeah, actually, we were when we ran into you at Autorama, we were talking about that with my grandma. I can still remember the building, and I was only 6-7 years old when they sold the building. And so for me to remember what the building was like, my father's drywall business was in the adjoining office next to it. So it's something I grew up at those two places most of the time when I wasn't at school.
I was going to say, you must have thought that this was normal.
Yes. Everything, I get those questions all the time. Everything that I grew up doing, it's normal day in the works for us. I mean, we work our day jobs to make sure that we can go racing at the end of the day. And that's what, I mean, we go home, work on the cars and do everything revolved around racing. And our day jobs are just something to keep us busy for it.
Okay. You know, the funny thing is that there is nothing on the cars. I mean, it's a black car, gold rims. You know, normally people have names on it or whatever stickers on the car. But yours is just, if you don't understand the black car with the gold rims, we can't explain it to you. You know?
Yeah, and you know, the car started with the windshield banner. I'm actually working on having the windshield banner remade that says Nighthawk Racing on it. Our graphics guy is working on that for me right now. He's working on, we're working on reopening Nighthawk Performance as well. So I'm working on the logo, website, everything regarding that. So we're trying to bring the Nighthawk look and feel. We're going to keep it all the same, but we're bringing it back the same way.
Now, there's a couple of questions that come on. Car that you have is a Mazda, and was that your grandfather's last car that he campaigned?
That and the Dragster were the two last race cars that he had. He still does have one of his 66 Chevelles. He still has his Dragster, and then he still has the Mazda. Now, the Mazda being in my possession, as I said, it's still his. So he still owns three race cars that are in his garage that were the last three cars that he had.
You know, what was that conversation like? Did you figure this one out and said, well, maybe around Christmas dinner or something, that you go, Gramps, do you really want that black car out back? You know, it's probably not doing you any good. I'll take it off your hands for a while. I mean, how did you get this iconic car away from your grandfather?
Well, it actually started, so I started racing a big car, and when I say big car, I started in the junior dragster ranks. So your first big car is always a car that you explain is your first big car. And that being a full-size race car like a Mazda, for example, my first one was an S10. So I started with a 94 S10 racing that car in 2009. I raced that from 2009 to around 2011 when we sold it. When we sold it, I was away at college, so I didn't have the full time that I needed to be able to put into the sport. So after I was completed with college, I came home, I was talking to just over at Grandma and Papa's one day, talking to them, and I brought up, I'm like, well, I don't have an actual car that's mine full time. We have enough cars in the family that we kind of all play musical cars and jump in different seats. But I wanted a car for me. So as I was just talking to him and said, you know, I remember the Monza. I've always looked up to the Monza. It's a great car. It's sitting in the garage doing nothing but rusting away. I mean, when I took it out of the garage, I grabbed the brake lines and they rusted and crumbled in my hands.
Oops.
So it had been sitting for a while.
Yeah, just so, a bit.
Yeah, so we just kind of got on the conversation of, hey, what's it going to take? And I mean, we've talked when I first took it, we had talked about we were going to make it a car that both of us could drive, that he could drive as well. With retirement, it's hard for him to be in the garage working on cars all the time. It's tiring work.
Yeah.
So that was what we had talked about, was me taking the car to rebuild it, get it ready. We both can drive it. And we've talked about him coming out and driving it. He has not driven it yet. I still push for that all the time, but that's something that I've always wanted, is for him to drive it after I've rebuilt it.
How do you do that? How do you word that to your grandfather? Because you got to hit him for every single angle, because really, talk about a made-for-TV movie. Here's one of your grandfather's favorite. I would assume that it would have to be one of his favorite cars if he kept it all this time, right?
Oh, yeah, he loved the car. He still talks about it, tells me the stories about what he had to do in different aspects. A couple years ago, I actually broke the wheelie bars.
Oops.
And, yeah, and it was the same wheelie bars that were on it when I got it. So I ended up building a new set and everything, and it was a conversation of how he got the wheelie bars. He used to run it at Detroit Dragway, and he would tell me that everybody loved the wheelies that it did, because it can do a wheelie every time, especially now that I have the big motor in there. It could almost flip over backwards if I let it. So he told me the story of he used to race at Detroit Dragway, had no wheelie bars, and every pass it would come up and the crowd would cheer and everybody was happy about it. Whether he won or lost, coming down the return road, everybody was cheering for him. So he didn't know. Back in Detroit Dragway, they didn't have an ET shack at the end of the track like we have now that gives us a time slip that tells you what your reaction time was, what you ran, and if you won or lost.
Right.
They didn't have that. So you had to drive back to the tower and get a piece of paper. Well, normally the crowd would cheer for who wins. Well, because he did a big wheelie every time, he didn't know if he won or not, because the crowd just cheered for him. And so he wanted to, one, make it more consistent, which wheelies sometimes aren't always consistent depending on how the car can move.
Yeah.
Especially if they get out of hand, you got to lift off the gas. So it's not something that you want to do, but it's definitely fun to do. I'll be the first to say that. But it's not something you always want to do. So he decided to put the wheelie bars on it just to make the car a better car.
You know, it's amazing, too, because you think, all right, here's this car, because really, if you're a Hollywood producer, first of all, you want to meet this family quick, you know. Second of all, you do have that, you know, that Hallmark movie kind of, you know, you open up this big garage door and here's a dusty Mazda. You just see the front end of it, you know, flashback to all the, you know, success your grandfather had in it. And now here's your turn to turn the 9/16, get it all nice and clean. And that one glorious day, your grandfather says, all right, let's crawl in and do one last pass. La la, and fade to black. You know,
yep.
What a movie. But, you know, when you're doing the wheelie and stuff that you were, I mean, do you carry them very far? And when we say that, it means when you do a wheelie, for those who don't know, it's your front ends, your front tires come off the ground. And depending, it could be like, you know, anywhere between a couple of inches to Little Red Wagon, you know, when you're like way up and pointing. How far up if you broke the wheelie wheels, you must have been pointing up in the clouds pretty far.
Well, one of the best pictures I have of it, and actually this is it's hanging in the office next to me, so I'm looking at it right now. One of the best pictures I have of it is I found a picture of Papa. I believe the year was 1993 at Summit Motorsports Park. At the time, it was Norwalk Raceway Park. He did a wheelie, and it was about 60 feet out, and it was pretty close to the rear bumper. Well, couple years ago, after I broke the wheelie bars, I ran it without wheelie bars.
Woo!
For a little while. And what I had to do is I had to pull timing away from the engine. For those of you that don't know timing and how that works in the engine, your spark is set at a different degree of timing based on your engine. You can actually pull that degree of spark away so it fires at different times and pulls power away from the car. So I would pull timing out of the car and just let it eat. And there was a couple passes. Actually, it was the first pass after I rebuilt it with the big motor, big block Chevy. I had a 498 in it at the time, and it surprised me. I let go of the trans brake button, and the car took off, and next thing you know, all I could see was the sky. So your first reaction is turn around and look down and see, are you getting closer to the wall or further from the wall? Well, it was going straight.
Yeah, I don't know if that'd be my first reaction.
Well, that was my first reaction, was to look down.
I'd be looking for body fluids, but yeah, you're right. When you're pointed up that high, you're right. When you look out to the left, because very, very few people have experience, and I do thank you so very much for reducing that for folks who are new to the sport, to explain what spark meant, pulling a spark. You know, but when you pull a wheelie, you have the control to either do one or not do one, right? I mean, within reason, right?
Well, it all depends on the car. For example, wheelie bars will prevent you from doing a wheelie at any point. Now, you can do different types of wheelie bars. Now I have on there what I would call top sportsman wheelie bars or pro stock wheelie bars. They're long, solid metal wheelie bars that, once it hits, they're so long that they have a little bit of flex in the tube that it allows you to kind of come back up and it springs you back down. Now, what it used to have on there was, I guess, what I would consider a super stock wheelie bar. They had springs on them. So as you hit the wheelie bars, the springs would compress and allow you to hit, and then it would push you back down slowly, not as hard. Well, those wheelie bars allow you to do a little bit higher of a wheelie, but still be under control. Well, if you're not running any wheelie bars, the only control you have if you do start to do a wheelie is lift off the gas, or eventually you may hit your bumper, and that's what's going to put you back down to the ground. So when I looked down and seen that I was going straight, I didn't lift. I just let it go and just stayed in the gas. I would say it probably went about 100 feet, somewhere in the 80 to 100 feet range before the front wheels finally came back down to the ground.
How high up were you off the ground? 6 foot, 7 foot, 1,000 foot?
front wheels, I would probably say four and a half feet.
And then, because you can't steer, I mean, all of a sudden that steering wheel gets awfully light. And if you're doing that for 60 feet, are you thinking, okay, when I come down, how hard am I going to hit that front suspension? Or am I still going to be able to control this thing going straight? I mean, what goes through your head when it's like, okay, it's time for the front end to come down now?
Well, there is no experience that will prepare you for your first time doing that. pretty much there's
yes,
two reactions.
Right.
Yeah. There's two reactions. You either stay in it and just hope that everything goes well, or you can lift off the gas. At that point, like you said, about how hard is the front suspension going to get?
Yeah.
If you lift off the gas while you're in the air, you're coming straight down to gravity.
Right. And see, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, and it can be very catastrophic on a car.
Yes.
Whether it be the oil pan, the front suspension, something can hit the ground and mess up.
Yeah, because with front ends on certain race cars, and the higher up in class you go, they're not built like Jeeps, you know? I mean, they don't have this real heavy duty, we can do some bouncing like this. And sometimes the tires are not the same tires that you have on your Malibus at home, where they could take a little bit more of a oomph and a steel rim. I mean, everything up front is lightweight for a reason, you know. And so when you pull the front tires up, do you find that it's still a fan favorite if you carry, you know, down the track?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, going to one of my favorite things to do as a kid was every year we always looked forward to the Halloween Classic race at Summit Motorsports Park or Norwalk Raceway Park, whichever you want to call it.
Sure.
They do on Saturday nights, they do what they call an air show. It is a wheelie contest. I always looked forward to that as a kid because it's something you sit in the stands and you watch every car try to do the biggest wheelie they can. And you get money for doing the longest or the highest wheelie.
Would you rather go, Tyler, would you rather go long or high?
That's a hard question. From a driver perspective, I would like to say long for the reason of the longer the wheelie is, if you're not as high, you can carry it out and have a little bit more control on the car. If your car just comes out and goes straight up in the air, yeah, that's probably a fan favorite.
But.
But you're going to do some damage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are certain cars that people seen in the 60s and 70s that were specially built to go up extremely high, extremely long. And there are some folks that built their vehicles so they would go the whole quarter mile, you know, but they had holes in their floorboards and stuff. They could see kind of what they're doing, and it was harder to, they had special steering mechanisms and everything. It's not like what Tyler is experiencing in his Monza. I mean, it's got to be amazing because you know that you can control basically when it lifts, right? As opposed to, because there's more of a slipping of clutch, if I'm not mistaken, how?
Well, once it comes up, so with the Monza itself, it runs a two-speed power glide.
Right.
Once it starts to come up, if it does begin to get out of hand, your first reaction would be to reach over, or actually, I shouldn't say first reaction because it's not everybody's first reaction. Your best reaction would be to reach over and put it in second gear. Obviously, when you shift a gear, you're bringing the RPMs back down. So that's going to take some power away from the car and allow the car to set down easier. If you lift off the gas at that point, like we talked about earlier, it's just going to slam back to the ground. So
yeah,
with that car itself, really the only control that you have to bring it down to the ground is to put it in second gear. And if it's still not coming down, it could very well be a ride.
So people are seeing when you're racing and you're pulling the wheels, you're not showboating at that particular point. I mean, that's how much torque you have.
Well, that motor, the last motor that I had in there was around 915 horsepower. I don't remember the exact numbers for torque off the dyno. I could probably look that up, but I don't want to give you a wrong number, but it made 915 horsepower on the engine dyno. And so that motor was a little bit too much power for that car itself. The Monza is a short wheelbase car. And as you put more power and torque to it, its first reaction being short wheelbase is come up. And that's not always what you want.
No, not at all. You know, we just got a note over here too that says your grandfather had a Chevelle, had the Monza,
yep,
had the long body, the Fueler body style dragsters, but yet he worked for Ford.
Yes.
There's a story here.
You know, and everybody in my family drives a Ford car. We all, I have a Ford F-250 and a Ford Edge. My parents both have Ford F-150s, and my grandparents, now they have Lincoln, but Lincoln is Ford.
Yeah.
So, but when it comes to a racing motor, your small block Chevy, your big block Chevy, those are your basics. You're getting down to the basics of drag racing. You go to the racetrack, I don't want to say 90%, that might be a little bit high, but 75 to 80% of the motors that you're going to see there are either a small block or a big block Chevy.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's numbers are pretty doggone close.
You're yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's
well, like, I say, don't shoot me for estimating the numbers, but I'll try to get close.
Yeah. Like we're going to get one of our interns are going to be coming running in with the paper going, no,
yeah,
it's not. No,
guy?
It's not. Yeah, really. It's like, oh God, no. I mean, you could, cause you could basically think back in the Top Fuel in the Garlitz era and funny cars when there were funny cars, basically everybody was running a Hemi, and that was pretty easy to say about 70-80% were running at that time. Now it's pretty easy to say Chevrolet's got kind of the market covered. I mean, we do have our Ford friends here, and you know, the folks with the 7.3s coming 7.4s, and they're saying we're going to take back drag racing. Okay, that's cool. You know, but the whole nine yards is that we have, as you well know, we have Randy Lindemood that runs around here on occasion, and he has a unique perspective, and I never met anybody that had almost the same perspective as you have. I mean, his father being Roger Lindemood of Color Me Gone, I mean, you had school Monday through Friday, finish your books Friday, pack the truck, go to drag strip X, come back Sunday, do your homework on the dashboard, get ready to school on Monday. That was a normal kind of thing.
Yep.
Now,
And that's how I grew up as well. I said earlier, I grew up racing junior dragsters. So at 8 years old, I started with my first pass into junior. Now, I did have an incident. We can get into that in a little bit.
Sure.
I did have an incident, my first ever pass into junior. I made one more pass that day, and then my parents made me wait one more year till they felt I was fully ready.
I got a funny feeling. All right, we can't. Yeah, as a parent, I almost can imagine where this one's going. But Tyler, do tell us about that story.
Oh, we're absolutely going to get into that. But our biggest thing is running juniors is obviously we're in elementary, middle school, high school throughout all of our years of running junior dragsters. At the time that I raced, you could run from 8 until 18 years old.
Wow.
Now they've lowered the age. You can start at 5 years old and race until you're 18 as well.
Wait, you can start at 5 with a junior dragster?
Yes.
5?
Now, you can't compete until you're 7, but at 5 years old, with the track's discretion, you can make individual passes as a junior to get used to it.
What do you put a governor on that? I mean, 5 years old.
They actually have engine restrictions. So when you're 5 and 6 years old, NHRA has a specific Briggs & Stratton motor that you're required to run that is supposed to only go 13.99 seconds in the eighth mile. That you have to be slower than that at 5 and 6 years old.
Wow. Wow. Because this is, as much as junior dragster was supposed to start off as a relatively inexpensive thing, it can get a little pricey nowadays.
Oh yes. As you know, but to tell the listeners, my stepdaughter is going to be running a junior dragster this year. So I'm working on building and getting her junior ready. It's a whole family affair here. And so with the junior that we've been working on, luckily she was able to win the junior dragster from a Norwalk Raceway Park raffle. So we didn't, the chassis itself took no expense out of our hands, but at the same time, the rest of it still does. It is a very expensive hobby, just even starting as kids as well.
And I'm sorry, your stepdaughter's name is?
Allison.
Allison, and Allison is how old?
Allison's 6 years old. She turned 7 in June.
All right. Does she understand the enormity of this?
Well, that's something that we work on a lot. We'll go out to the garage and sit in her car, and I'll say, okay, hit the brake, hit the gas, turn left, turn right. Right now we're working on getting the fundamentals of the car down, what you need to do at every aspect of the track and how to control the car.
You know, how did she do that? Did she come up to you and go, you know what, I really would like to do what you guys do? Or did you say, we have a car here, we have a girl here? Let's put it together.
Well, it's same thing that I say happened to me is the same thing I'm going to say happened to her. Is it's in her blood. I am her stepfather, so it's not in her blood directly for me, but her father is a racer as well as her mother's stepdad. So her mom grew up around racing as well, and that's how we've kind of all known each other. And for her to have the ability to race, she's been around it her whole life.
Wow. All right, so here's yet another sequel to the Hallmark movie. Gee whiz. Okay, so now with you You can back up the story a little bit further with your story. All right, so here you are born. Bink, your parents are both racing at that time, right?
Yep. As we always say, both me and my brother were born on a Monday because our parents were at the racetrack on Sunday.
Okay. So, I mean, so here's the really funny thing. Okay, people have grandfathers that race. Rarely do you have grandmothers that race, you know. And your mom, from my understanding, our grandmother did a heck of a job.
Yes. Mom and grandma were both very well-known racers, very well good at what they do. Mom continues to race now. She is a great racer. I mean, we can put her in any of our race cars and she's comfortable and she's able to sit down and say, I know what I'm doing. We set, obviously everybody knows a car has to be set up to a person. Well, based on height and everything like that, you got to be able to reach the pedals. You got to be able to reach the steering wheel, everything like that. Well, with mom being the shortest person in our family, we set every car up to be adjusted for her. So if I get into my car, my pedals might be a little bit closer than your average person would have them set for them. But at the same time, I'm comfortable that way.
Right.
For the reason of that's how every car I've ever driven has been set up for mom so that we all can jump in everybody's car and run it.
Must be nice. If you're your mom, God, every car is ready for her to go. But now your mom runs a dragster. And she's been on the show. And as a matter of fact, she's coming up again, too, if I'm not mistaken. Daniel?
Yeah, I believe the 14th.
Yeah, she'll be with us in April. It's an amazing – I mean, you think about it. With all your cars at one given time. Now, mostly if people are going to see you, they're going to see you guys at Norwalk. They're going to see you at 131. I mean, that's almost kind of home tracky for you. I'm not really sure – how far you travel in Michigan?
Well, so Michigan-wise, we'll hit almost all the tracks. We will hit Milan, Mid-Michigan, and US 131 for sure this year. We'll be at each one of those three at least once.
Right.
We'll also be at Norwalk in Sandusky. So it can be – now, as for outside of state, we'll travel based on what events are going on that weekend. For example, I've kind of been working on the schedule on my free time. We do follow the NHRA Division III Sportsman Series. So with that series, it takes us out to Chicago. It takes us to Indianapolis. It takes us to Columbus. And it could, depending on where we're at for points and how far we do want to travel, it can take us to St. Louis and it can take us to Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Other than that, we stay home. Jeez, what do you have? Like starting April 1 till October, nobody sees your home on the weekends?
Pretty much. Now this year we're looking at our schedule starting around May 1st. We're going to try to be out the weekend before that for testing, but as of May 1st, we're aiming to be at a race called the Little Banger at Kilcare Raceway Park in Exenia, Ohio, which is right by Dayton.
The Little Banger?
Yeah.
Okay. It's marketing. It's good.
Yeah. For those of you familiar with the Street Outlaws race, actually, Disco Dean Karns, the driver of Stinky Pinky, is a promoter of that race.
Okay. Now, when you take a look at your schedule and you make it up, is it everybody around a big round table and one light over the top and everybody's got a couple of ginger ales and they go, okay, May, where do we want to go?
It's a mix of a couple things. So what I normally do is I sit down and I make a master schedule that says, okay, this weekend we have these choices. This weekend we have these choices. Now that does, and then what we'll do is we'll sit together as a family and say, all right, this is our goal to be at this race, and this race. Now that doesn't always mean that we'll be at those exact races. Based on weather, based on travel, anything like that, we can turn around and say, let's go to option two instead this weekend because that race is too far away. We're not doing that good in points and financially or even time-wise, it's not reasonable for us to go there, so we'll go to option two instead.
Yeah, because it's, for those who don't know, you don't have to, like, sign up, like, in April and say, dear Norwalk, we will be there at this race. I mean, you kind of do, but you don't have to sign up that far in advance, right?
Correct. The only races that you 100% have to sign up early for is the NHRA national events. So those are the races you see on TV with John Force, your Top Fuel, your Funny Car, everything like that. We try to go to some of those races as well. The one that we guarantee try to hit every year is the NHRA Summit Racing Equipment Nationals at Summit Motorsports Park or Norwalk in Sandusky. That one, in order to qualify for an NHRA national event, you have to go to so many of the NHRA Division III or any whatever division you're in. You have to go to so many of their divisionals, which is a sportsman-only race. Each race that you go to, you receive a grade point. So that grade point, as they add up, what they'll do for the national events, they open them up at levels. So they open it up and say anybody with 7 grade points or more can get in now. Then a week later, it's 6 grade points and more, and so on down the list. So the more divisionals you go to, the better chance you have of getting into those national events.
Now, when you get the grade points, are they a cumulative of how many rounds you've gone or that you just showed up and did a round?
All you have to do to get a grade point for the event is show up to the event and put your car through the technical inspection.
And you've done this, you know, I was going to say, you know, you're almost like the Opie Taylor here. I mean, it's like, here, son, go grab in the car and go get the car teched. Okay, Dad. And I mean, How old were you, 11, 12? No, you'd have to be at least old enough to drive, but...
Well, as soon as we started driving our own cars, we take our own cars to tech. So when I was 16 and had my 94 S10, I would get into it and take it to tech and have the technical inspector look the car over. They look at your helmet, safety equipment. They look at the safety equipment on the car, everything like that, to make sure that your car is viable to go down the track.
You know, when you come from a family like this, it's got to be a little tough because they know of your racing lineage. I mean, Mickey Mantle Jr. never was as good as his dad. I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, the Force family, that's maybe a little bit different. But if you got, you know, famous parents and grandparents and you are the youngest generation, how much pressure was on you?
Oh, there's a lot of pressure. to this day.
Yeah.
Ooh. To this day, I still say the old man shows me up all the time. My dad, last year, he did win a 10 grand race. And 2 years ago, he won three super comp races, which is the 890 index throttle stop racing. He won three of those in 1 year, two for NHRA and one for IHRA.
You know what? We just had Nick Jenowick on from Ubley Dragway, and he was explaining classes because we really – want to have people understand when we're talking what we're talking about. If you'd be so kind, Tyler, and just to say, all right, what is an 890 class? I mean, obviously it's kind of apparent, but a stop is what?
Yeah, so a throttle stop can be done in multiple ways. The most common way, there's two of the most common ways, is one of them, what we can do is we can put a bladed throttle stop underneath the carburetor. That throttle stop will actually close blades to a certain percentage on a timer. So when the car launches, our typical setup is we go 0.2, so 0.2 of a second off the starting line, those blades close. We have them on a timer to stay closed for a certain amount of time. When that timer's up, the blades open back up and allow all the air to flow back through the motor and allow you to go back down track under full power.
Wow. Okay. So that's, in case anybody asks you, there's your 890 class.
Yeah. And that's done also, that's done in the 890, 990, and 1090 class. If you're at an NHRA race, those are called Super Comp, Super Gas, and Super Street. Super Street being 1090, Super Gas being 990, which is what the Monza runs in, and then Super Comp being what we run our three dragsters in, is the 890 index.
Do you know, when you have the full team with you, how many vehicles are you campaigning at one time in the trailer or in as many trailers. Jesus, how many trailers do you guys have to pull in? Two?
Well, so if we're all of, with the Monza sitting last year and not having the Junior out last year,
right,
we had three dragsters ready at all times. So when we went to the racetrack, we were able to fit all three dragsters, our golf cart, extra fuel, and a moped all inside of our stacker trailer.
And you didn't do moped drag racing, in case people wanted to know. Or did you?
Well, you know, some races will have a golf cart race. If they end early and want to do something, they'll do a golf cart or pit bike race.
Wow. Okay. You know, it's got to be amazing when you pull in, because you're going to need a whole lot of space for your pit, right?
So the NHRA rule is 10 feet per car, but a 20-foot maximum. So if we have three cars, we have the trailer itself and then 20 foot on the side of the trailer to park all three cars.
All right. So if you have three cars, now if you bring in the Mazda, does one of the dragsters stay home?
Well, no. We'll actually, I have my own trailer, the Monza or a dragster. One of the cars will end up going in there. We can still fit three in the other trailer. So my trailer will pull the fourth car. And at that point, it doesn't, you're not limited to the 20-foot maximum. You can actually do 20-foot per trailer. So we could get enough space for all four cars in our pit area.
You know, we do have people writing in on our email and asking questions, and they're saying, if there's your mom and your dad racing, why do you have three dragsters?
Well, so depending on the races we go to, if we go to a NHRA race, only one person can drive one car. So if we go to the NHRA Divisional at Norwalk, for example, the Cavalcade of Stars coming up in May, we'll be there with the three dragsters, and each one of us can only drive one car. So I'll drive Super Comp, Mom will drive Super Comp, and Dad will drive Super Comp. We'll all be in the same class.
Do you ever pick on each other? Do you ever get lined up with each other, or do you can try to stagger your start time?
We try not to. So first round of the NHRA races is everybody pulls in the staging lanes and you run the person that's next to you. So what we do as a family is we say, okay, you go up first, second person waits a little bit, goes up in the middle, and then the other person hangs back and kind of goes up to the staging lanes at the end. So we're spread out enough. The other thing we'll do as well is we'll all say, okay, we're running the same lane to make sure that we don't have each other.
Right. Did you ever get misshifted and had to race your mom or your dad?
I have not ran mom or dad in a competition event. We have ran against each other in time runs. Now, I have had to race my brother in competition a couple times. And I believe right now we're tied at two wins and two wins apiece.
How does that work on the way home? Two brothers. I beat you. Oh, you're the blah, 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 blah. I mean, how do...
It does get competitive. We always, after we race, we've always gone up and talked to each other. Knowing that it's a bracket race, the concept of breaking out is always there.
Yeah.
So, for example, I remember a race that I ran my brother last year at Dragway 42 in West Salem, Ohio. We both got to the finish line. We were both looking over at each other, and next thing you know, we both hit the brakes as hard as we could. He ended up hitting the brakes a little bit harder than I did, and I broke out by more.
Ow.
Yeah, so it turns out to be just a matter of, you know what, especially when you're racing family, you know how they drive.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a different driving style. So you go into that race knowing what your game plan is already, and you try to stick to that game plan. It doesn't always happen, but you try.
Is he older than you, younger than you?
He's 2 years older than me.
Oh, and you don't want a red light next to him now, would you?
No, and actually, one of the last times that we raced before that, he did red light to me, so it goes back and forth.
Did you hit him with a wet towel afterward going, red lighter? Okay.
It's always a given that you're both going to be ready and amped up and ready to go.
Yeah.
Right when the light turns green. So you're trying to hit that tree as hard as you can. When you're racing somebody, you know there's a chance somebody's going to go red at that point because you're ready to go.
Yeah, and your adrenaline is pumping and everything's going. Because we've talked to many, many racers, and we'll get your insight on this. When you go up to the line, whatever car you're driving, you just got done in the box, tires are ready to go, and you're coming up to the tree. What do you see?
Well, so every driver has their own process. I know drivers out there that what they'll do is they put their head down and they sing a song before they stage.
Okay.
And I kind of have something a little bit similar, but not as in-depth. What I do is I do my burnout and I back up.
Yeah.
I pull back forward to the line a little bit. I put the car in neutral and I put my head down for a second and just close my eyes and take a couple deep breaths. At that point, I look over at the other driver and say, okay, is he ready to go? If they're moving up to the line, I'll start moving up to the line too. So I put the car in first gear, roll forward till I'm pre-staged. At that point, when I'm pre-staged, I put the car back in neutral and look over at the other driver to see what they're doing. I don't know if anybody's familiar with staging games or anything like that,
yeah.
But sometimes you'll get somebody that wants to play a game with you on the starting line.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't necessarily have a game that I have in mind or anything like that, but my general rule of thumb is I don't care if I go in first or last, but I won't be the first to move. So if I see your tires inching towards the stage beam, I'll go in, and if I happen to stage first, I stage first. So what I do is I put it in neutral, and I look at his front wheels to see, is he moving? If he's moving, I put it in gear, and I go in stage, and I'm ready to go.
You know, and that's the thing is, too, that we've talked to a lot of racers on here that goes, either I want to be first one in there to show him let's go, or I'll wait for him. I mean, not necessarily because you can't burn down in your class or into the classes that these people are running, you know, mm-hmm. But they definitely do have that, we'll wait for you, and then you got to make this start. And it's like, okay, you know, just go.
And I kind of have the same mentality of, I'll wait for you as long as it takes, but you're going to be the first one to at least take an inch.
But you know what? We're not going to take an inch is that, God, we're a little bit over. I'm sorry, Tyler, that we kept you so long. You know, we only told you a few minutes. However, let us know, who is your sponsors?
Well, so currently my sponsors are, I'm in my work right now. I always got to say them. Safety Track has been a huge supporter of me. We're based out of Belleville, Michigan. We're a GPS company. We also have Psycho B Racing. That's my family's company. They help me out more than I could ever imagine. Nighthawk Performance Plus is a company that I'm working with right now. And then we have some other companies that help us out a lot. Felina Racing Transmissions is a big one out of Port Clinton, Ohio. KB Carburetors out of Toledo, Ohio. Raystar Industries Wheels, they're new on board with us this year. We're a supporter of them as much as they're a supporter of us. Then we also have Wired to Win is a wiring company for race cars out of Akron, Ohio. And then Performance Clinic out of Dayton, Ohio helps us with our motors.
See, we can always hear the wheels turning. Who am I forgetting? Who am I forgetting? Who am I forgetting? You know?
Yeah, it's always a challenge to remember them all.
Yeah, but all of them are super important. If there's anyone that you forgot, make sure you write back to us about it. Tyler, you've been outstanding with us. You know, thanks for coming in at the very last moment. But, man, we couldn't ask for a better person to come on in today at the 5:15 show. What a unique perspective you bring. You know,
I appreciate it so much. I appreciate you having me on. I love talking to you guys. Like I said, I always take an opportunity to talk about racing because it's what I've always loved to do.
Tyler, we enjoy you. Thanks, man. Hang on the line for just a minute. We'll get right back to you. But right now, CKIWI Radio 76 with the Rolling Stones and Jumping Jack Flash.